Morning. Today's daf from Pesachim Peivav. We are on the last daf of the seventh parak of the Masechta, dealing with the Karban Pesach. The Gemara, we're coming off of a Mishnah yesterday that describes what happens when an Aver, limb of the Karban Pesach, is outside of the walls of Yerushalayim. What exactly, how exactly are you going to, how are you going to be able to remove the meat of the Karban Pesach without breaking the bone of the Karban Pesach? And the Mishnah concludes by saying that the what exactly are the perimeters of Yerushalayim, what exactly is going to have Kedusha at Yerushalayim. The Mishnah ends off by pointing out that anywhere interior of the doorways is considered interior, anywhere exterior of the doorways is considered exterior. And as far as windows are concerned and the thickness of the walls are concerned, so that is going to have the same status as the interior. That's the Mishnah that we saw yesterday. A quick discussion that we had yesterday in the Gemara revolved around the idea that when it comes to the actual doorway itself, the doorway itself is always going to have the status of the interior, with notable exceptions. The doorways of the walls of Yerushalayim, in order to create shelter for the Mitzrayim, so they're not going to have the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. So that way, the Mitzrayah, who is Chutz HaMachane, he's outside all of Gimel Machanos, he has a place to seek shelter. And also Sharni Karner, the eastern gate of the Yazara, so that's not going to have the status of the Yazara, because the Mitzrayah, when he's in the eighth day of his Tahara process, when he's bringing his Karbanos, so he has to be able to stand in that doorway. And if that doorway had the Kedusha of the Yazara, he wouldn't be able to stand in that doorway. Good. That was the Gemara that we saw yesterday. Amar Rav. We are now three lines from the bottom on Pei Hey Amud Beis, and continuing Amar Rav. So we start with a statement by Rav, which is Gagim Va'Alios L'Niskachu. So Rav starts off with the following, that there is kedusha, and Rashi over here writes that the kedusha that we're describing is that we're describing the kedusha of Yerushalayim and the Azara, meaning any of the areas that have kedusha. So it's basically only the ground level that has kedusha. And nothing above the ground level is going to have kedusha. So if you're dealing with anything that is above ground level, the Gagin and the Aliyos, so you have a building, any kind of structure. So if you're above the first floor, so that's not going to have the kedusha. It won't have the kedusha of the Azara. It won't have the kedusha of Yerushalayim. The way Rashi presents it, you won't be able to eat your kachim kalim in Yerushalayim. You won't be able to eat your kachim in the Azara. So fine. So Rav says that the only thing that was imbued with the kedusha is only going to be the ground level and nothing above that. So, Ini, the Gemara says, now, is that really true? Vahama Rav Misham Rebbe Chia. Now, Rav quotes the following in the name Rebbe Chia, and that is Kezesa Pizcha Vahalila Paka, Paka Igra. As far as the eating of the Karban Pesach is concerned, now, just interesting that Rav is quoting Rebbe Chia, so neither of them had the benefit of eating Karban Pesach. They lived well after Chorban Beis HaMikdash. So the, and again, we can get to that, you know, that discussion that maybe there was Karban Pesach even after Chorban Bayis Sheni. We touched on that earlier, but it seems to be unlikely. Anyway, whatever, it's a Masorah that they had. Anyway, Kezesa Pizcha. So there are two parts of this Masorah. One is that there used to be Chaburz Gedolos. Rashi describes it. Chaburz Gedolos hayunimnim ad shelo hayu ha-Pesach magia l'chol echa ki im kezais min ha-Pesach. So there was these big groups all around one Karban Pesach, which means that there wasn't really a lot of Karban Pesach that was consumed. Maybe every person got one kezais and that's it. Now, mind you, of course, is that you need a kezais, meaning in order to fulfill the mitzvah of achilas karban, so you have to have a kezais. So, but that's everyone. That's all that anyone got because the groups were so large. And then the next part of the Masorah that he had is halila paka igra, the halal that we said right on the Seder night. So we have the halal. Right, there are two halos, possibly two halos. The halos said during Maariv, which is debatable whether we say or we don't say it. Right, the Beis Yosef notes that we say the halal on the Seder night after Maariv. Anyway, but minag Ashkenaz yesh v'yesh. Some have the minag not to say it, but regardless, there's a halal that said at the Seder that everyone agrees to. It's part of the Haggadah. So the Masorah that he had is that when they said the halal, so literally it would burst open the roof. But as Rashi points out over here, what it means is domin Rashi, the last two lines of the Rashi. Domin ki ilu agagim is bakin. Shayu omri mahalo ala pesach. So it's as if the roof were burst open, meaning it was really nice. The halal that they sang was really nice. Kidnan lakaman, Rashi points out, we're going to learn later on. Harishon taun halal al achilaso. Okay, so so you need to say halal over the Karban Pesach. We're going to see that about a week and a half from now. Anyway, so that's the Masorah that he had. So now, The Gemara continues, my love, as we are now on the top of Pevav Amud Aleph. So my love, the Achli Be'igra, the Amri Be'igra. So presumably what they did is that they ate on the rooftop and they sang halal on the rooftop. That presumably is what they did, right? That's the meaning of this Masorah that we have from Rav. So the Gemara says, lo, Dachli Ba'ar V'Amri Be'igra. So the Gemara says, no, that's just simply inaccurate. They ate on the ground level because you're only allowed to eat on the ground level because it's only the ground level that has Kedushas Yerushalayim. And then what they did for halal is V'Amri Be'igra. So then afterwards they went up to the rooftops in order to say halal. Ini, the Gemara says, now, is that really true? V'hatanam, we have an Mishnah, Maftir Achar Pesach Hatzikamen. It's one of the last Mishnahs coming up here in Pesachim, right? We're familiar with it because it's part of the Nusach of the Haggadah in terms of the Chacham. So this is our answer to the Chacham. We quote the Mishnah. Emaftir Achar Pesach Hatzikamen. What does the Mishnah mean? So you can look at Rashi right over here. So Rashi writes, Emaftir and Kishihigiyaz Manolihi Patir Minasuda. Basically, we're talking about the end of the meal. That's the haftorah, if you will. There's a lot of information that's Rashi. So Rashi points out, now at the end of the meal, you know what we're going to be doing? We're eating Karban Pesach at the end of the meal. Now this is not something specific to Karban Pesach, says Rashi. It's true by every carbon. Every carbon has to be eaten at the end of the meal. So this is predicated on the halacha that when you eat carbon, you have to eat it in a state of royalty. You can't be famished when you're eating a carbon. You have to be already somewhat satiated so that when you're eating the carbon, you're eating it in a dignified manner. Good. So that's true by all carbonists. It's also true by Karban Pesach as well. So that's interesting in and of itself. Rashi over here writes clearly that the idea of eating the Karban Pesach at the end of the meal, which is the ikar time to eat the Karban Pesach, is going to be a function of a halacha that's true by every carbon. And now as you have ended the meal, now what's the halacha? Ein niftarin Rashi. Ein niftarin al yedei afikomen. So what we're going to do now is that one is, you're not allowed to leave. Now what exactly does that mean? Va'amar rav shelo yakru mechabur lechabura. What you're not allowed to do is jump from one chabura to another chabura. So that means to say that as long as you, even if you're at the end of the meal, so you can't exit, you can't go from one chabura to another chabura. So the Gemara says, Lokasha kan b'shas achila kan shel b'shas achila. Okay, that's true, but that's still while you're at the end of the meal. But when you're shel b'shas achila, but when the meal is totally done and finished with, right, the Gemara doesn't say this, but, you know, I'll suggest you benched. So you know that the meal is totally done with. So at that point in time, so now you can exit. Now you're allowed to leave. Good. So that's the truth of the matter is that now our pshat and Rav is still preserved. We still have now a really good pshat within Rav. And that is the idea that when you are, when you're anywhere in the course of the meal or even when you're at the end of the meal. So you have to stay within that chabura and then you're not allowed to go. According to Rav, they said halal on the rooftops. Yeah. When the meal was over, and again, I'll add, you know, presumably went after they benched. So then you go to the rooftops in order to say halal on the rooftops. Halal, you don't have to be in a makam kaddish in order to say halal. You just have to be somewhere there. I heard, I don't have a source, but plenty of people have said it. So I imagine it's source, but I heard the minig is that right prior to saying Shvoch Hamascha at our Seder night, so we open the door. So it's a little bit funny that we open the door. So, okay, Eliyahu Navi, I know we have a lot of other explanations in terms of why we open the door. But I heard as an explanation of why we opened the door is based on this Gemara right over here. Because what happened, what was the minhag back in the day as taught to us by Rav and Rebbe Chia? So the idea is that when the meal was over and after we have concluded our entire Seuda, so at that point in time, what we're going to do now is that we're going to go to the rooftops to sing halal. Okay, so admittedly, we don't go to the rooftops to sing halal, but the idea is that now we're allowed to exit. Meaning it's at this point in time we're allowed to exit. So I heard that part of the minhag of opening the door that at that point in time is to signify that now we are in fact, at least in theory, allowed to exit because the meal has come to an end. Okay, could be. Again, I don't have a source, but I've heard of such an explanation. Tashma. Again, we are going back to the statement of Rav. Rav says that the only thing that has kedusha is only ground level. Anything above ground level and presumably anything below ground level is not going to have the Kedusha. It's not going to have the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, nor is it going to have the Kedusha of the Azara. So the Gemara challenges this once again, Tashma. We are on Pei Vav Amid Aleph. We're about 6 lines from the top of the Amud. So Abba Shalom Alias Beis Kodesh Hakadoshim Chamur Mi Beis Kodesh Hakadoshim. So there are two floors to the Kodesh Hakadoshim. Kodesh Hakadoshim, at least in the second Beis Hamikdash, as told to us by the Mishnayos and Midos. So it went up 100 Amos up into the air. And it was separated. So each floor was 50 Amos. So which of them had more Kedusha? So if I had to guess, I would have guessed wrong. So I would have told you that the lower floor has more Kedusha. That's where the Aron is. That's where the Kohen Gadol goes on Yom Kippur. So that's what I would have said. And the Tosefta teaches me that that's not right. The Tosefta says that it's the second floor that has more Kedusha. The explanation is really interesting. Let's see it together inside. The second floor of the Kodesh HaKadoshim actually has more Kedusha than the first floor. So as far as the first floor is concerned, the Kohen Gadol goes there one time a year, right? Yom Kippur. Now as far as the second floor is concerned, so the Kohen Gadol goes, I'm sorry, people go in there, maybe once the Shemitah. Some have it twice the Shemitah. Some say once in a Yovel, once every 50 years. Right, as Rashi over here explains, the walls are going to crack and basically you need upkeep, an upkeep at a minimum. Once every 7 years, twice every 7 years, once every 50 years. And so therefore, it's a really interesting correlation over here. The more infrequent, or let's say it a little bit clearer, the less frequent a place is frequented, the more Kedusha it's going to have. Because you have people going to the Kodesh Kedoshim once a year, all right, so that has a certain level of Kedusha. But then the second floor of the Kodesh Kedoshim, where people don't go there once in every 7 years and once every 50 years, more Kedusha because it's frequented less, okay? It's an interesting brisa, but anyway, what comes out over here is that the second floor of the Kodesh HaKadoshim is going to have Kedusha, even though it's not a ground level. That's obviously a question. So I'm Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef says it's not a question. Mehechel nekum v'nesav inish? You're asking from the Hechel, the actual structure itself? Shani Hechel dichsiv. We have psukim regarding the description of the Hechel. Here we are in the very beginning of Divrei Hayamim. V'itain David l'shoma b'noas tavnisa olam ves beit haves genazav v'ali yosav v'chadarav apanimis v'beitza kaporis. So over here, David gives Shlomo the plans for the Beis HaMikdash, including the Aliyos, the second floors, and Uksiv Hakol B'Chsav Miyad Hashem Alai Hizkil, and the pasuk describing that the architecture, the design of the Beis HaMikdash is all done Miyad Hashem. It's all divinely inspired, and so therefore every part of the actual structure itself is going to have kedusha and the second floor as well, and that doesn't contradict Rav at all. Rav is talking about the courtyard. Rav is talking about the layout of Yerushalayim. There, it's only the ground level that's going to have Kedusha. But as far as the structure is concerned, the base of Mikdash, so that's going to have, that's for sure going to have Kedusha. Tashma. The Gemara says, okay, let's consider the following. We have a Mishnah over here in Meister Sheni. Halishkos habenuyos bekodesha upsuchos lechol. So tochen chol vegagusein kadosh. If I have any lishka, they're chambers that surround the Azara. So there are benuyos bekodesh. The actual chambers themselves are in the Azara. However, their opening is into the chol. It's into the har bayis area. So tochen chol vegagusein kadosh. So the interior area of the chamber is chol, meaning it has har bayis status. It does not have Azara status. However, the rooftops are going to be kodesh. So Tirgam Arachista says, yeah, that Mishnah is correct, but we didn't understand the Mishnah correctly, meaning we're looking at everything over here two-dimensionally. So we don't look at it two-dimensionally, look at three-dimensionally. And that is Bishagagosem Shavim Lakarka, Lakarka Azara. Ah, we're talking about a case where these chambers are subterranean to the Azara. So that means to say that the Azara has got structures above it, structures below it. And what we just described over here are basically subterranean chambers. So these chambers are subterranean to the Azara, and the exit goes down to the Harabias. And so therefore, now we understand the Mishnah. The Mishnah is telling us that when you go into these structures through the entrance through the Harabias, so the interior of these structures, which is below the ground level of the Azara, so they're going to have the Kedusha of Harabias. However, on top of it, meaning when you're on top of it, you are now on the ground level of the Azara, it's going to have the Kedusha of the Azara. Okay, that's a, it, it, it's a, it's a solid way to explain the Mishnah. Ihachi, the Gemara says, sorry. So, Ihachi, the Gemara says, well, that's true, I'm a sefer. So let's now take a look at the next part of the Braisa. The next part of the Braisa is Benuiz Bechol, Upsuchos Lekodesh, Tochan Kodesh. So if they're built in the Harabais area and they're opened up into the Azara, the Kodesh, so Tochen Kodesh Vegagosem Chol. So the interior is Kodesh and the rooftops are going to be Chol. So Azara, and again, what do you want to tell me? You want to be consistent and tell me that these are subterranean and its rooftop is basically going to be running parallel with the ground of the Azara, so Havil Mechilos. So then what are you really looking at over here? You're looking at tunnels. V'amar Rav Yochanan Mechilos lo nizkachu. And Rav Yochanan says that tunnels are not imbued with Kedusha. So it can't be like what we described earlier. So Ki Kamar Rav Yochanan, the Gemara says, no, can be. And as far as Rav Yochanan's statement is concerned, be Psucho Sahara Bias. So the, no, when the opening is to the Harabias, and it's subterranean, so then it's not going to have Kedusha, like Rav Yochanan said. But Kitanya Hi, but this brisa that we just learned, Bipsuchos Azara, when it's opened up into the Azara. So Vehatanya Rabbi Huda Omer, Michilos Mitachas Aechal, Chol. So the Gemara says, yeah, but don't we have a brisa that tells us that tunnels that are opened up to the Hechal are in fact considered Chol, meaning they don't have the Kedusha of the Hechal, Kitanya Hi, Shipsuchos Chol. The Gemara says, yeah, but that's what we're talking about, where the entrance of it, its access point is going to be outside of the Azar, it's going to be in the Harabais. So under those circumstances, it's going to have the status of Chol. So basically, when you have a tunnel that runs under the Azara, so depending on where its access point is, if the access point is to the Azara, so it's not going to have Kedusha. But if you have something that is subterranean, but it's opened up into the Azara, so then in fact, it's going to have the Kedusha of the Azara. Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, let's do this again with another Braisa, Vigago Kodesh. So, and the Gag is going to be Kodesh. The Gemara says, V'tisbara v'akitani Gagin alalu, ein ochlem sham kache kadashim, ein shochten sham kachim kalim. The Gemara says, before you even ask me the question of Gag or Kodesh, look, it says really clearly over there that the idea is that even though the Gag is Kodesh, but you can't eat kachim kachim over there, you can't shecht kachim kalim. So over here, when we said it's imbued with Kedusha, it's not in the classic sense, because if it was imbued with Kedusha, in the classic sense, you could do all the activities that you're allowed to do in the Azara. Eat kachim kachim. Shecht kachim kalim. So the Gemara says, ve'ela kasha gago kodesh. So what do you do with the brisa that says gago kodesh? So I'm Rav Chama Bergur Yel Osam Bezamos. Kedusha over here is to be understood contextually. It means that it has Kedusha so that I could put away some of the clay mikdash in that area. The Gemara says, I'll give an example. Didnan. Right, we're talking here about the Beis Amos. We're talking about the measuring sticks. Didnan. So here we are now. This Mishnah, we've already seen together. It's a Mishnah Midos. Okay. Didnan Beis Amos, Ayub Shushan Abira. Achas al Kerem Mizrachis Tzvonis, v'achas al Kerem Mizrachis Dromis. So if you go now to the eastern entrance of the Harabais, you're going to find over there a huge mural of Shushan Abira, right? When building the second base of Mikdash, so either as a political move or whatever inspired the mural, so there was a huge mural of Shushan Abira on the eastern entrance of the Harabais, and over there, there were two measuring sticks that were placed on that entrance. So there were two measuring sticks. One on the northeast, and the other one in the southeast of this wall. So Keren Mizrach, I'm sorry, Achas al Keren Mizrach Tzfonis, v'Achas al Keren Mizrach Tzdromis, Zeisha al Keren Mizrach Tzfonis, Haitza Yisera al Moshe Chatzi Etzba. Now we're talking about measuring sticks that were larger than Moshe's Amma, meaning Moshe's Amma was the standard Amma that was used in terms of measuring any kind of linear measurement. And then what they had in the base of Mikdash is two measuring sticks, each one of them exceeding Moshe's, one by a half of an etzba, just basically a half an inch bigger. And Vizush al-Ker Mizrach Dromis Do'aisa Yisera Allah Chatzi Etzba. And one that was an additional half inch bigger, meaning a full inch bigger than Moshe's. Nimsi Yisera Al-Shal Moshe Etzba. Right? And then you take one half and you add it to another half, and you get to a full etzbah. Okay, good. Higher math for today. Anyway, v'lama hayu achas gadol v'achas ketana. And now, these two measuring sticks, what were they do? What were they used for? So they were used for suppliers to the base of Mikdash. Shayu gadola. Because any of the suppliers who supplied material to the base of Mikdash, so what they would do is as follows. So when you had a contract with the base of Mikdash, right, in other places in throughout Shas, we talk about contracting with the base of Mikdash, where the base of Mikdash is always going to be in the driver's seat of these contracts. And as far as the contractor is concerned, the supplier is concerned, so he has this chus of actually providing for the base of Mikdash. Anyway, one of the benefits that are given to the base of Mikdash is that, let's say you had to measure something from a linear standpoint, so you don't measure with a standard Amma measuring stick, but you're going to have to measure a supply with one of these extended measuring sticks, either the one that's greater than by a half of an etzba, or the one that's greater than one that's greater with a full etzba. And the reason why you're going to be supplying with these is so that if you're using a standard measuring stick, so it could be now that you contracted whatever the contracted price was, right? Just for argument's sake, $10 an amma, and now you provide an amma, but you kind of measured short. So what's going to end up happening now is that all that money that you just received, so some of that money now is going to be excess money, not payment for the goods that you supplied. And now you're going to be in violation of Me'ilah because now you have consecrated funds that never become deconsecrated. In order to avoid that, so now what was legislated is that you're going to be after measuring using these larger sticks. So that way you're always going to be oversupplying. So there was always going to be redemption of the money on the goods that you supplied. Good. So that's that's the purpose of that. And the whole point that we're making over here is that where did we hang these measuring sticks? We hung them on the wall. So when we say Gogo Kodesh, all we mean is that it has enough Kedusha so that you could put the Kli Sharis on it. Okay, Vitarta Lamali, and then hopefully the question everyone here is wondering, and why two measuring sticks, one a half of an etzba larger, the other one a full etzba larger. So Achas Akasba Vidahava Achas Labinyana. So good, one's for gold and silver, and the other one is for other building material. So when you're talking about gold and silver, so obviously it's going to be really a serious burden to the supplier where every time he's got to supply gold and silver, you're going to have to be measuring with a larger measuring stick. It's really going to cut into your profit. So therefore, even though the base of Mikdash is favored, but only by a half of an etzba, but when you're supplying other goods, so then it's a full etzba and it really won't cut into the profit of the supplier. Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, chalonos v'ove choma kelifnim. So when we're talking about the windowsills and when we're talking about the thickness of the wall, so that's like the interior. And the reason why we just quoted the end of the Mishnah is because once again, it seems to pose a difficulty for Rav. So I understand when we talk window over here, we're just basically talking about a breach in the wall that's allowing light to come in. And I can easily imagine that we're talking about where basically the window goes all the way down to the floor. And so therefore we're talking about ground level. And that's not a difficulty. But Ella Ove Achama, but we're talking about the thickness of the wall. Heich Mishkachalam. So the Gemara says, so what are we talking about over here? Meaning the thickness of the wall. So obviously we're talking about some height of the wall. So some height of the wall. And if we're talking about some height of the wall, so then we're above ground level. And as we learned, this has started off our whole daf today, that does not have the Kedusha. And meanwhile, the Mishnah told us that when you have a low wall, so anything interior, anything that is short of the outside of the wall is going to have the status of the interior. And that goes against Rav, because Rav says that the Gagim and the Aliyos are not imbued with Kedusha. And to that, the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. Generally speaking, you won't have Kedusha. But over here, we're not just talking about any kind of wall. We're talking about an extraordinarily low wall. So mishkachala, that's the Gemara says. So ela ove choma heich mishkachala bebarshura dichsiv. We're talking about a really low wall. We have a pasuk in Eicha vayaval chel v'choma v'amar Rebbe Acha v'itema Rebbe Chanina shura barshura. So in terms of the mourning, when we're mourning the loss of the Beis Hamikdash, so we're mourning not only the wall but the barshura as well, even those really low walls. Okay, so over here we're describing the really low walls that have the kedusha. Good. Ad kan, that takes us now to the Mishnah. We are in the Mishnah on Pei Vav Amud Aleph so far. Really, we've covered just one topic so far today. Rav says that when it comes to anything that is above the ground level in Yerushalayim, in the Azara, it's not going to have the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. It's not going to have the Kedusha of the Azara. And what the Gemara now has done is that it has successfully defended that Shita of Rav over the course of the first half of today's daf. We are now on Pei Vav Amud Aleph. We're at the Mishnah towards the bottom of the Amud. And here we go now with our second sugya of the day. Shtei Chaburos. Shayu Ochlim Bevayis Echad. So you have two Chaburos that are in the same house together. And these two groups are eating one carbon Pesach. And as we're going to see very clearly, our Mishnah over here is of the position that a carbon Pesach can be divided into two groups. Shtei Chaburos Shayu Ochlos. Look at that first Rashi in the Mishnah. Pesach Echad Bevayis Echad. So it's one carbon Pesach eaten in one house, divided in two groups. So our Mishnah says that's fine. So Shtei Chaburos Shayu Ochlim Bevayis Echad. Elo Ofchenes Paneim Vaholech. So they could each be facing in different directions. Now, as Rashi over here explains, I'll say the Rashi outside. As Rashi explains over here, they don't have to be facing in opposite directions. They can be looking at each other. The point the Mishnah is making is that they don't have to be looking at each other. Meaning what you can have is you can have a carbon Pesach, divide the carbon Pesach, and so that the carbon Pesach now is going to be eaten in two separate groups. That's the Chiddush of our Mishnah. Vechameim beemsa, and you can even have the urn, the hot water urn, in the middle. And again, Rashi over here explains that also is part of this chiddush. Meaning, one could have easily argued that it's going to be a hefsik between the two chaburos. And Rashi says, and you know what? Let's even argue that lo ichpat lan. Rashi says we don't care. Meaning, the point over here is that carbon pesach can be separated. You can have two groups of people, obviously, by the way, let's just make this clear, they were all registered to this carbon Pesach, but in terms of now creating a chabura so that you're eating bechabura achas, so you can have the carbon Pesach divided into two chaburas, and you can have now the two groups eating the carbon Pesach and two chaburas, even though they're not facing one another, even though you have an urn separating the two groups, that would be fine. Ukisha shamish amid limzog. Now, when you have a shamish who is now serving these two different groups, so kofetz es piv umachzir es panav. So he puts his hand over his mouth. He turns his face away. Ad shemagia etzol chaburaso veochel. Until he gets back to his chabur and he eats. So in other words, not to give the impression that he's going to be eating in the two separate chaburas, meaning each member of each of the chaburas has to maintain integrity with their own chabura. They can only eat with their own chabura, and they are not allowed to eat in other chaburas. And so therefore, when Hashamish is going to be serving the other chabura, so he has to be demonstrative of the fact that he's not with this chabura, covers his mouth, turns his face away, fine. And then the Mishnah gives us a little bit of Hilchot Snias, Ve'akala Ofeches Es Panev Ochelas. Now, as far as the Kala is concerned, so what she's going to do is that she has a little bit of embarrassment. She's eating now, she's a young Kala, she's eating with this brand new family. Everyone's looking at her. She's the center of attention. So what she can do is that she can eat a little bit more modestly. She can turn her face away. She doesn't have to be facing the people that she's eating. She's allowed to turn her face away. And the halachas of modesty, would allow her to do so. We're going to come back to that point a little bit later on. So the Gemara starts off with the following. What's clear in our Mishnah is the idea that one carbon Pesach can be subdivided into two chaburos. Masisa mani Rabbi Yehuda Yiditanya. And now we're going to see together that our Mishnah is taking a stand on what is a controversial point. Meaning, as we're going to see in just a moment, machlokas tanaim, whether or not a carbon Pesach can be divided into two chaburos. And our Mishnah says that it can. Our Mishnah is subscribing to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda Yiditanya. The Gemara here quotes the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Actually, the Bryce over here is going to bring down the machlokas. We learned in a braisa, detanya labatim asher yochlu oso bahem. So the houses in which you're going to eat them, malamich ha-pesach nechal b'shtei chaburos. So that teaches us that the carbon pesach can be divided into two chaburos. Yachlu yeya ochel ochel b'shtei mekamos. What about the actual consumer himself? Can the consumer himself go now and jump from one chabur to another? No. Tamalom reba b'ayis echad yei achel. So you eat it in one house, meaning one house over here, meaning one chabura. So the carbon Pesach itself could be divided into two chaburas, but once you now are assigned to a particular chabura, that's it. You are eating with that particular chabura. And so from here, they said, meaning this now explains the Mishnah, which must have, the Nusach must have been known to everybody. So Mikan Amru, that when you have the Shamash, he was eating Kezias, Bitsada Tanur, he's eating by the oven. So E-P-K-F, so if he's smart, whom Amalek Kroisum Imenu. So the first thing the Shamash should do is fulfill his mitzvah of Achilles Karm Pesach, eat. And that way, he will not be tempted to eat in any other group. Now, the Imratsu B'nei Chabur La'asos Imo Tova, Bain V'yoshim B'tzido. Now, if the B'nei Chabur want to do him a favor, so what they could do is they could sit by him. And that means to say now that they're going to basically hold a spot in the Chabura. So that way he can go and he can come back and he'll be still at the same Chabur, Div Rav Yehuda. Okay, so that is Shitas Rav Yehuda, which again is really a reflection of our Mishnah. The idea that the Karm Pesach can be divided in separate Chaburas, but once you now are assigned to a particular chabura, you can't jump to another chabura, even though the jumping to the other chabura would allow you be eating from the same Karm Pesach, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana of our Mishnah, so you are not allowed to jump from one chabura to another. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Allah batim asher chlu osa behem lamisha ochel ochel b'shtei mekamos. Now Rabbi Shimon fundamentally disagrees. So he says that no, as far as the consumer is concerned, so the ochel can go and jump from one makom to another makom. Meaning as long as he's eating from the same Karm Pesach, so you don't have to limit yourself to one chabura. So you can go and jump from one makom to another. Yachol ye nechal b'shtei chaburos. So now I might have thought that a Karm Pesach, the Karm Pesach itself can be subdivided into two chaburos. Tamalomer b'bayis echad ye achel. No, b'bayis echad ye achel. It's going to be consumed in one house, meaning that the one carbon Pesach can only be relegated, can only be assigned to one chabura. So that's the Bais Echad Yeachel. So b'may kamiflagi. So we have over here machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, so basically the carbon Pesach can be divided, but once you're assigned to a chabura for that carbon Pesach, that's it. You must be eating in makom echad. You have to be eating in one location. And as far as Rabbi Shimon is concerned, the Karm Pesach has to be relegated within one chabur. Only one chabur can eat that Karm Pesach. But you, the consumer, now you can pick up and you can move locations, but as long as you maintain eating within that same chabura. So Tamala is the, So b'maikem iflugi, Rabbi Yehuda savar yeshem l'masar, Rabbi Shimon savar yeshem l'mikra. Now as far as the Nekuda Machlokas over here between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, so it's all going to be a function of what to give more emphasis to. The way the Pasuk is pronounced, or the way the Pasuk is spelled out. So as Rashi points out over here, Tab Rashi, second Rashi. So Tam Lomer Bavais Echad Ye Achel V'kasavar Yesh Eim L'mikra Ye Achel Apesach Kai. So the way it's pronounced is Ye Achel, which is clearly going about the item that's eaten, meaning the Karm Pesach, V'lo Agavre, and it's not talking about the people eating it. Klomer Iker Tchilas Echilas Ote B'chabur Achas. The Karm Pesach is to be eaten in one chabur. This is all the shita of Rabbi Shimon. That's the Yesh Eim le Mikra, the way it's read. So V'lo Yischalek L'shei Chabur is not to be divided to chabur. So V'agavra Ibai Kai Mehacha V'azav V'achal Hachal. But as far as an individual is concerned, he can jump around. D'lo Kapit Rachmana Ela A'ikar Tchila Sachila. As far as the Torah is concerned, it's where we're the emphasis of the Torah is that we start with one chabura. So midekarinan ye achel a pesach velo ye achel agava. The ye achel is going on the Karm Pesach and not on the individual. That is the shita of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Huda, on the other hand, attaches more emphasis to the misora, to the way that it is spelled. And since it's spelled yochel, even though of course we're going to pronounce it ye achel, but since it's spelled as if it could be pronounced yochel, so it's talking about the consumer. Meaning as far as the consumer is concerned, so that's bevayis echad yochal, meaning it's going on the consumer, and the consumer is going to be eating it in one location. Okay, now, with that stated, so now let's see if we can really highlight the practical differences between the shitas Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. So hayu yoshvin, we're on the top of Peivava Midbeis, four lines down, the Gemara is going to try to suggest two nafkaminas. Hayu yoshvin, menifrasa mechitza b'neihem. So let's say they're sitting, And then someone puts in a makeshift wall separating the other two groups. So if you subscribe to the Sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, which is that the Korban Pesach can be eaten in now two locations. So over here now, we have just created two locations, but that would be fine. And Ledivrei Omrein, a Pesach Necha B'Shtei Chaburos Ein Ochlin. However, if you subscribe to the idea that the Korban Pesach cannot be divided into two groups over here by making a makeshift partition between the two, it's as if we've created a new location. The way Rashi says it is that this change of scenery is tantamount to a change of venue. And therefore, it's as if you're eating into Chaburos, and Rabbi Shimon would say that that's no good. Conversely, if let's say you were sitting down and the makeshift wall was taken away, so the one who says that you're allowed to eat in two mekamos, so that's fine. And the one who says that you cannot eat in two locations, so over here you wouldn't be allowed to eat it. So this is all the nafkaminas that is presented by the Gemara. We don't have attribution in terms of who said it, but the Gemara suggests now that this would be nafkaminas between these two positions. So Yosef Rav Kahana Kapashi Lei Mifshat. So Rav Kahana sat down and he said over these nafkaminas that we just said. What if you put up a wall? What if you take down the wall? And he said the nafkaminas the way we just presented it. So Amalei Rav Ashi Rav Kahana. So Rav Ashi says to Rav Kahana Viti Bayilach Ibaye Siluk Mechitza Vasiyas Mechitza Mihavi Kebeis Mekamus Kebeis Chaburos Dami Olo. And Rav Kahana was very Rav Ashi was very upset. And Rav Ashi says to Rav Kahana, I don't understand, meaning you're saying this as if this is so obvious. It's not so obvious, meaning just because there's a makeshift wall and either you put up a makeshift wall, you take down the makeshift wall, that really is not going to treat the area like from one makam to two makamos. It's going to make it from one chabur to two chaburas. He says, I'm not so sure if you're right about your assumptions. And rather than saying it as if this is a davar pashut, really what you should be doing is you should be asking us questions. Take what the Gemara leaves his questions unresolved, meaning the Gemara's conclusion is that we're really not sure. We really do not know with clarity, with certainty, as to whether or not this is considered a bona fide nafkamina that would really distinguish, make differentiations between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, and now we get to finish up the daf. Hakala feches es panam my taima. So as far as the Kala now sitting down, eating Korban Pesach together with her new family. So she writes, she's by her in-laws now for the first time. So she is now going to be a bit of a center of attention. So what she could do is she can eat in a somewhat more mass fashion. And the Gemara says, the Gemara spells this out. My time, my Rabbi Chiya Barav, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Mimnei Shehi Busha. She's embarrassed. Rashi writes over here, Mimnei Shehi Busha. Rashi's towards the bottom of the Amud, before the lines get wide. So Lechol Leinei Anashim Al Yedei Shemistalkim Ba. Okay, people are going to look at her. People obviously shouldn't look at her, and people should direct their stare elsewhere. But anyway, she's a new feature to the family, and she's going to garner attention, and so she can basically turn her face away. Now, Rav Huna Breid, Rav Nasan Ikla Lebe Rav Nachmar Yitzchak. The Gemara finishes up this perek with the following story, and that is Rav Huna goes to the house of Rav Nachmar Yitzchak. So Amalei Mashimcha. So there are going to be five notable action points of Rav Huna that are going to be curious. The Gemara is going to wonder, like, how did he do that? So let's see if you can find all five at the beginning. Obviously, as we go through the Gemara, I'm going to highlight each one of the action points of Rav Huna that was curious. So I'll just run through the story, and then afterwards, obviously, we'll highlight what was curious. So, Ikla Lebe Rav Nachmar Yitzchak. So Rav Huna goes to the house of Rav Nachmar Yitzchak. And Amrulei Mashimcha, they ask him what's his name. Amrulei Rav Huna. So he says, my name's Rav Huna. Amrunes of Marapuria, would you sit down on the bed? Yosef, he sat down on the bed. Yavulei Kasa, they handed him a cup of wine. Kibla Bechad. So he accepted it the first time. Kibla Bechad Zimna accepted the first time. Vishasa betrayed Zimna. And he gulped it down in two gulps. Velo Ahadar Ape. And he didn't turn his face away when he drank the cup. So the Gemara now is going to really dissect the story point by point. Amrulei, my time akarit lecha, Rav Huna. Number one, we asked you what your name was, and you said your name was Rav Huna. And presumably the issue over here is he introduced himself as Rav Huna. Okay, I guess it depends contextually where I am. If I'm in school, so then I introduce myself as Rabbi Sugarman. Generally speaking, I don't introduce myself as Rabbi Sugarman. So it seems like the Gemara is critical of the fact that he introduced himself as Rav Huna. So Amar lo Baal Hashem Ani. So he says, well, that's my name. Now it's an interesting Rashi over here. Rashi writes, Baal Hashem Ana, Mikat Nusai Kach currently Rav Huna. So I've been called Rav Huna from a very young age. I'm not sure what Rashi means by this. Meaning maybe people just referenced him Rav Huna even as a kid. That's really difficult to understand. In other words, Rav is a term of respect, of reverence. It's really challenging to understand that he be called Rav Huna even as a kid. Probably what Rashi means, but I'm just guessing, and I don't have to be right. But probably what Rashi means is that he had smicha for a very long time, or whatever the equivalent of smicha for a very, very long time, and he's been called Rav Huna for just simply a really long time. And his explanation is just simply, look, by habit, everybody calls me Rav Huna. I've been called Rav Huna forever. And, you know, I'm kind of used to it myself. Okay. And it sounds like from the Gemara that from just a standpoint of humility, so you shouldn't give your title unless people want to know your title. And as far as Rav Huna is concerned, so he's been called Rav Huna for so many years, it's kind of ingrained into him. Okay. I imagine that's the back and forth. Anyway, that's number one. So my tamaki amr lech neisev aporia yasva. Now we asked you to sit down on the bed. Now sitting down on the bed is a position of prominence. And right away you sat down on the bed and you didn't just for a moment think to yourself, you know what? That's an action of prominence. Only prominent people sit in the bed. I'm not worthy. And meanwhile, you just jump right on the bed. So amr lehu, so Rav Huna says, yeah, I'll tell you why. Because kal mashi amr lecha balabais ase, chutz mitzeh. Whatever the Baal HaBayis tells you to do, that's what you should do. So you're instructed by the Baal HaBayis. You're a guest in somebody's house, and the Baal HaBayis tells you what to do. That's exactly what you do. In the parenthesis, we have the words chutz mitzeh. Except for when he tells you to leave, that you don't listen to him. Now that, of course, is really strange. What exactly does the Gemara mean by that? So it makes a lot of sense that that's in parentheses. Perhaps it doesn't belong here. So I heard B'Shem the Vilna Gaon. And again, I don't have a Maramakum, so... But again, enough people have said it, and it's been, you know, it's been reported many times. It's a grape shot. So that is chutz mitzeh. So the Vilna Gaon says, you're right, he has the girsa, and the Vilna Gaon says the pshat over here is as follows, right? Don't get to the point where the Baal HaBayis has to ask you to leave, meaning that you should take enough of a clue in terms of when it's time for you to leave, and don't ever get him to the point where he has to tell you to leave. Okay, well, wonderful pshat. Anyway. Next, my tamaki avilech kasa kiblat bechad zimna. We gave you a cup of wine and you didn't fake protest, not even once, right? Someone hands you a cup of wine. No, thank you. Even though you want it, but really polite, right? Etiquette would dictate that you should say no, thank you, right? Similarly, when someone asks you to daven for the amud, so you shouldn't chomp at the bit. What you should do is you should say no and then have them ask you a second time, a third time. So Amr Lahu, Masarv Lakatame, Masarv Lagado. So Rav Huna had an explanation for that as well. Yeah, so there is etiquette and you should refuse, but that's only when someone is asking you is a katan. But over here, I think, who is my host? My host is Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. So he's a gadol. He tells me to drink a cup of wine. He tells me to take the cup of wine. I'm going to take the cup of wine. My time, Ishta Sebetre Zimne. Now you gulped it in two gulps. Now, isn't that inappropriate? So his answer is, nope, that's not inappropriate. So Amar Lo D'Tanya, we learned in the Braisa, Shosa Kosa Bevas Achas Harid Zagargaran. So the Braisa says that when you drink your cup in one gulp, so that's a glutton. Shnaim Derech Eretz, two is appropriate. Shlosha Migasei Ruach. Sipping is arrogant. So my time, Alo Ahadrat Apach. Now, you didn't turn your face away when you drank. Amar Lo Hu, Kala Ofechas Panah. So for that, he had the answer as well. And that was the last Mishnah of the seventh parak of Pesachim, otherwise known as our Mishnah. So he's holding by the Mishnayos, obviously. He knows our Mishnayos, and he quotes our Mishnah. So the Kala turns her face away, which means that the default posture when you're drinking your cup of wine is that you should be facing the crowd. Okay, good. All right, so that was the story which almost finishes our daf, but tonight we just have a little bit more to go. Rabbi Shimon b'Rabbi Yosi, ikla lebe Rabbi Shimon b'Rabbi Yosi ben Lakunya. So the Gemara tells the following. The Gemara here calls it a Mishnah. I don't know where the Mishnah is, but anyway. So, So Rabbi Yishmael b'Rabbi Yossi goes to the house of Rabbi Shimon b'Rabbi Yossi, and they give him a cup, kibble b'chad, zimna. So he took it the first time, b'sha'as b'chad zimna, and he drank the whole thing in one gulp. Now, amru lei lo sever l'amara, ha'shoz kosa b'vas achas, ha'rei ze gargaran. Now, what are you doing over there, drinking in one drink, in one gulp? That's a glutton. So amru lehu lo amru b'kosech katan v'yena chamatoku kreso rachva. So he says, look, the rule is a good rule, but again, you got to add a little bit of context to the rule. So if the cup is small and the wine is sweet, and it happens to be that my stomach is really large. Now, it's kind of funny, but Rashi says, the Gemara in Bava Metzia also describes that the stomach of Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi happened to have been a larger stomach. And so therefore, he says, considering all of the above, so one gulp for me is not gluttonous. Amrav Huna b'nei Chabura nechnasim b'shlosha. The last halacha over here says Rashi. This halacha of Rav Huna has nothing to do with Karm Pesach. It's just basically some more derech eretz, just more appropriate etiquette behavior vis-a-vis being a waiter and serving people. And that is b'nei Chabura nechnasim b'shlosha v'yotzim afilu be'echad. That as far as a group going in that's going to be served by a waiter, so you should go in as a group of three. You should not go in individually. Now, right, being that I don't have experience as being a waiter, so I don't fully understand this, but I bet you that waiters would understand the Gemara a little bit better. The idea is, and Rashi says it over here, that when you're serving three people, so it's easier to serve three people than it is when they're coming in one at a time. Okay, I could guess in terms of why, but anyway, I just don't have the experience. I really don't know. But the Gemara says that's fine. Now, so all three should come in at the same time. Right, when you make reservations, so generally speaking, they say you can't be seen until your whole party's there. Okay, but that's separate. That's unrelated. That has to do with restaurants operating their business. Anyway, but over here, in terms of attending people, so you only have to start attending to them when all three are seated at the same time. Now, if they're going to be leaving one at a time, okay, that's fine. So Amar Abba v'hu da'ayol be'idna de'regile lema'ayol. So that's only when they're coming in at a time when people normally come in. Meaning it's got to be regular hours. Vehu deragish beidaila. And on top of that, also, they tell the shamish that they're not going to be all leaving at the same time. Then it's proper etiquette, but if they don't tell the shamish, so then they should all leave at the same time. Am ravina venosin schar damim, vitzarech ha'acharon lahosiv damim. Now, as far as the tip is concerned, right, propino, as my mother would say. So the last person should tip the... give the largest tip, because he's the one that's forcing the waiter to be there the longest. Seems reasonable. And then the Gemara concludes, but that's not the halacha. And presumably, what the Gemara means to say by that is that there is going to be an equitable distribution of the tip amongst all three of them. Okay. A funny conclusion to the parak over here. I mean, we did deal with points of etiquette. But anyway, But still, the Gemara's general point over here is that there are just a couple of end notes of etiquette, Hadron Lach Ketzat Solin, and that is the end of the seventh parak of the Masechta. And let's quickly recap. Our daf today is broken up into two parts. First part of today's daf, so we talked about the Shitas Harav, that anything that is above the ground level, rooftops and second floors and whatever's above the ground level is not going to be imbued with Kedusha. So that means that Karm Pesach in Yerushalayim has to be eaten on the ground level, right? The Pesach is Kachim Kalim, has to be eaten anywhere within Yerushalayim. But now, as we learned in today's daf, ground level of Yerushalayim, not above and presumably not below as well. Good. That was the Shita of Rav. The Gemara challenged from a number of different prices of Mishnayos, but when all said and done, the Gemara defended that Shita of Rav. And the same thing is true in the Azara as well, in the temple courtyard, where there you have to be shechting the Kachim Kalim, Kachim Kachim Kachim, and there the Kohanim are going to be eating the Chatas of the Kachim Kachim. So once again, the Halach is ground level, not above and not below. Okay, as far as the Heichal is concerned, so we learned that for the Heichal, anything above the ground level is going to have Kedusha, but that's because that the layout of the Heichal is going to be designed and architectured by Kadosh Baruch Hu through Nevuah. And so that's going to have the Kedusha. But in terms of the ground level of Yerushalayim and Har Bayis, only ground level. That was the first part of today's daf. Second part of today's daf has to do with eating of the Karban Pesach. And can the Karban Pesach be divided into two chaburas? Our Mishnah says, yes, it can be divided into two chaburas, even if the two chaburas are totally eating separate one from the other, even when the hefsek in between, so they could do so. Good. The person, however, once he is relegated to a chabura, cannot jump and move and change makom. So the Karban Pesach can be divided, but the individual cannot move around. That is the shita of our Mishnah. And as we learned in the Gemara, that's the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, you have the shita of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says just the opposite. Karban Pesach has to be confined to one chabura, right? Bevais echad ye achel, according to Rabbi Shimon, that's going on the Karban Pesach. As far as people are concerned, people can move around. But as far as the Karban Pesach is concerned, that's relegated to one chabura. The Gemara suggests maybe there are nafkaminas between these two positions, putting down a makeshift wall, taking up a makeshift wall, and Rav Ashi at the end was not so convinced that these nafkaminas are actually true. And then we concluded our perek with first a story regarding Rav Huna, who goes and visits Rav Nachman Yitzchak, introduces himself as Rav Huna, sits on the bed, takes a cup, drinks in two sips, and a number of behaviors that are curious, but Rav Huna defended every one of those behaviors. And then the Gemara concluded with Rabbi Yishmael ben Rabbi Yossi, who drank his wine in one gulp, but contextually it was okay. And then the Gemara concluded with tipping the waiter. And Hadron Lach and Tamar Mirz Hashem, we start the eighth parak of the Masechta.